This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Oh Brother, A Nico and Tugger Tale. And the author is Kimberly Sentek. And Kimberly joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Well, this is a really great children's book talking about these two great dogs, Nico and Tugger. They actually, this is based on a true story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very near and dear to my heart, based on my two dogs, yes.
They live there, and you say, you know, meet Nico and Tugger, two dogs that became brothers, and their story is an endearing and fun look at sibling rivalry from both of their points of view. So you've kind of taken an approach to help children better understand their world when they've got a brother or sister.
Yeah, that was the intent. It didn't start out that way at first, but then it kind of morphed into that. And I thought, you know, when we brought Tugger home after having Nico alone for 5.5 years, it was an adjustment for him. So we could totally see that, you know, if it's an adjustment for a dog, you know, it's definitely an adjustment for a child as well.
What was the genesis of all this?
Well, I've always wanted to write something. And as a child, I wrote a lot of poetry. And to be honest, it was kind of a split decision that I had to make. I'd heard that my aunt was publishing a book, and I thought, well, she can do it, so can I. And I called the same publishing company she was using, and I had to make a decision within a couple of days. So I thought, well, we're going to pull the trigger and try. So I wrote the first version of the book, which was just from Nico's point of view, and then after a few days, I thought, you know, doesn't make sense that I'm only telling, you know, one point of view here when there's another one, you know, when there's another dog here that, you know, his world turned upside down too when he came to this house, you know, and maybe it would be a good idea to show both of those sides.
So Nico was the first one.
Yes.
He's the one.
He was an only dog and he liked it that way.
Liked it. Liked all the attention.
Oh, absolutely. Belly rubs anytime he wanted without having to compete for anything.
And then Tugger comes on the scene, and these two dogs and the illustrations are great.
Yeah, they definitely captured some good faces on Nico, that's for sure.
Yes, and you have a lot of this in rhyme.
Yes. I figured, you know, a lot of kids, that's what they gravitate to. You know, I did a lot of babysitting in my time and had to listen to many Barney songs and thank God not the Wiggles. I was past that babysitting at that point. But it just seemed to be that, you know, rhyme caught their attention. So I thought, why not, you know, give it a shot.
So what age group for this book?
I would say, I just read to a preschool earlier this week, and they were 4. And they actually sat through it with no problem. I'd say maybe up to second, third grade, depending on the reading level.
Right. So this, of course, a lot of messages in the book through these two dogs. What are some of the things that you're trying to help children understand with the different kinds of situations in the story?
Well, I'm trying to help them understand that, you know, change will happen in life. Whether it's, you know, another sibling or, you know, whatever. And you kind of have to roll with it, which is what the dogs had to learn to work out, you know, through time was, you know, something happened in my life that I didn't ask for, but this is, you know, now how I have to deal with it. It also shows, I think, that, you know, a new sibling can come into your life, or whatever, a grandparent, somebody can just come into the house and kind of invade your space and, you know, how to react to it, that sort of thing.
Well, and we have, you know, dealing with toys and affection.
Mm-hmm.
And
treats.
Treats, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And Of course, the new little dog, the almost like a little baby in the home, seems to get all the attention.
Yep, and he did at first because it's true. He spent the first night, few nights crying all night. And as he would cry, then Nico would start crying. So it was kind of like I said instead of Hall & Oates, we had Howl & Oates in the living room. But, yeah. They certainly act like children, that's for sure. You cannot do one, you know, without doing for the other. If one wants a belly rub, the other one has to get a belly rub. If you're eating, you know, they like popcorn, which is my fault, but if we're sitting with a bowl of popcorn, each one has to get one piece thrown to them at the same time so they're not fighting over the same piece of popcorn. It's really funny to see how much they do act like children.
But I like what you did as the story progresses. Nico starts to see a little change in Tugger.
Yeah, and Nico starts to realize this isn't so bad.
Yeah, in fact, kind of Tugger turns into a friend.
Yes, you know, at first Tugger was that pest, and then, you know, it turns out well for both of them.
So, you know, even looks like they become pals, even sleeping right next to each other.
Yep, that's the truth. If Tugger is willing to share the dog bed, he will, you know, Nico and he will curl up together, and they do lick each other's ears. I mean, it almost looks like they're telling secrets. But they do get along really well. I mean, I'm blessed that way because we really didn't have too many altercations between the two of them that we had to break up, but they have found definitely a balance between, you know, what used to be and what is now.
So obviously helping children realize that even though it may be tough at the beginning, a lot of good can come out of having that brother or sister join the family.
Exactly. Because, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, your family, they're your first set of friends. And, that's what the dogs are to each other. You know, they're brothers and they're friends.
Now, this is the beginning of a series.
I'm hoping it will be, yes.
Very good. So you have some other ideas for Nico and Tugger?
I do. I've tossed around some ideas of them, maybe an adventure if they get out of the yard, you know, with one dog who is so excited to get out of the yard and you know, see what's out there while the other dog is, you know, a little bit gun-shy about being out there, knows he's going to get in trouble for, you know, disobeying the rules of, you know, leaving the yard. Talked about, you know, some other things, maybe about, you know, a trip to the vet or to the, you know, groomers. And after, you know, my plan is after a few books of them being mischievous, they'll go to obedience school and probably won't learn too much, but, you know, it'll be funny along the way.
And how do you see therapists using the book?
Well, I think therapists could use this for, you know, especially for children, you know, family situations where children are not happy that, you know, there's been some kind of change in their life. I actually spoke with one therapist who wants to use it with foster children and their foster families because, you know, she says a lot of foster children, you know, feel like they're not loved because for some reason they're not with their parents and they may blame themselves for that. So she's hoping to use it with foster children to help them, you know, integrate into the family and have the children of the family accept them in. So I think it can be used many ways. And obviously just it doesn't have to be foster children, you know, could be used for adoption, could be used for biological children.
And, of course, if I start this statement, you can finish it. Two stories in one.
Double the reading fun.
That's well put. Two stories in one, double the reading fun. That's what's great about this. There's two different stories. Gives kids just something to look forward to. And, of course, kids and adults, we all love dogs.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one thing I was explaining. If you wanted to read half of the book one night, you know, and then your child has something to look forward to, you know, the next night at bedtime to hear, oh, well, what's Tugger's thought on this? Or obviously you can do it all at one time. And same for if a teacher's reading it in school, you know, we can read the first half today and the second half tomorrow. Or, you know, I just thought that was a unique concept.
Well, very interesting, Kimberly. Great story. Really cute with a great message. And looks like more to come, perhaps, in the adventures of Nico and Tugger.
That is what I'm hoping for, yeah.
So the title is Oh Brother, a Nico and Tugger Tale. And Kimberly Sentek is the author. Kimberly, tell us how to get your book.
Right now, it's available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's available both in book print, you know, print version or e-version, you know, for the Kindle or Nook. It's also right now available on the iBookstore for Apple, the iProducts.
Great.
Well, very good. If you go to my website, there are links to Trafford, the publishing company, too, and there are links from my website to where you can get them online.
And what's the website again?
It's KimberlySentek.com.
Very good. Sentek.com.
And also on the website is our coloring pages of the actual Nico and Tugger. And there's some crossword puzzles that go with each tale. So the child would have to have read the book to be able to answer the questions and word searches as well.
It's a complete package. Well, congratulations, Kimberly.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview has been brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Wilton Translation of the New Testament, and the author is Clyde C. Wilton. And Pastor Wilton joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Pastor Wilton.
Good morning.
Well, great to have you with us at the everyone at the young age of 92. So we appreciate this great man and his dedication to really understanding the New Testament. He has translated from the Greek text this Bible translation that he calls the Wilton Translation of the New Testament, right from the Greek. Translated from the Greek text, and we'll learn more about some of the details of that, but I just wanted to read a couple things. You say this about your book. This book tells about God's salvation and how you can become a follower of Jesus. The book is true to the Greek and timely for any personal problem. Each verse has been carefully translated from the Greek. Well, that is, as you told me before this interview, you have been doing that for 40 years. 40 years ago, or you learned Greek.
Yes, I've been studying on it. There were so many translations coming out, and some were saying they were bad, and some were saying they were good. And I decided that if I was going to be a good evaluator of a translation, I better understand what the original language said. And so that's what gave me the motivation to start studying.
Now, you also have studied Hebrew as well.
Yes, I study Hebrew and Greek both each day, and I have classes. I teach those who are interested in understanding the Greek and the Hebrew.
Well, let's go back to your early years. You grew up in a family that worked real hard, you say. They were hard workers. They were farmers, and they didn't, of course, have much time for anything else but work from sun up to sundown. But you did have one great library with one great book.
That's right.
And what was that?
That was the King James Version of the Bible.
And you, I guess, were really attracted to it. You felt really wanted to learn from it.
It was the authority. It was the authority if neighbors came to our house. It was always the authority. I didn't know much about it, but I respected it as the book.
And you've been a pastor for how long?
Well, I've pastored churches for 72 years. I was in the Air Force for 25, actually 11 years and 5 months active duty and then reserve duty, but I finished up with 25 years and with the rank of lieutenant colonel.
What was the time in your life when you decided that you needed to share what you were learning from the Bible with others? I guess, you know, what was can you remember that moment? What happened?
Well, maybe not the moment, but the time. I was pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church. I'm still the emeritus, but I retired after 40 years. And during that time, I studied for my sermons and all, and then I got obsessed. First with the book of John, and I went through it and carefully translated each verse and put all of the words in the spreadsheet. And so when I got through with John, I knew how many words I'd used and how many different words were being used.
Well, as you point out, John, in the works of John, there are 28,450 words.
Yes.
The whole New Testament.
What now?
I say the whole New Testament, you have translated 136,872 words.
That's the complete of the New Testament. And I had spreadsheets, and at the end of each chapter, I had all the figures and then add them up all together, each book and all. And actually, Luke was the person that had the most of the words.
Well, Luke, he had, 18,438 words.
Gospel that was for one of the books. And
then
his other books.
Yeah, then you had... The 19,000, the Gospel of Luke, was 19,459 words.
Okay. Yes.
Well, let's really understand. Help us understand, Pastor, why it's so important to translate right from the original. And you have a great example you'd like to share with us.
Well, it's so necessary to use the original, because whenever you translate from one language to another, the C's don't match, and you can't get it all to go through. For instance, in the Greek, there's two tenses that refer to the past. That is the aorist and the imperfect. The imperfect is linear action past time, and the aorist is punctiliar action past time. So whenever we translate it from one language to another, we can't translate that because we only have one past tense, and it's for both.
Now, when we look at, for this example that you were telling me about, we looked at this time after the resurrection where Jesus was with Peter, and of course he asked Peter, "Do you love me, Peter?" And so give us the explanation why it's so important to translate from the original, given that example.
All right, that's a wonderful, wonderful illustration. Peter first, after the breakfast that Jesus had prepared, Jesus asked him if he loved him more than these other things. And he declared that he did. And he asked him the second time. And both the times was agapeus. Agape is one of the words for love. And then each time Peter answered him by saying, I love you, but he uses the word philo. But the third time, Jesus asked him in the word philios. And that's what grieved Peter, that Jesus would put it on that level. You know, now agape and philos are two different words, but in the English, they're all translated as love. Well, in agape, some people say, well, that is the God kind of love and all. Well, of course, that is true, but agape is not always good. Sometimes it's bad. And I'll give you an illustration there. In John 3:16, it says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes do not perish, but have everlasting life. Agape is used. And then turn on down about four verses there, and it says that they loved darkness because their deeds were evil. Well, that time it wasn't so good, was it? And then over there in John where it says, if you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. And both words are used agape. So agape, I think, is the word of esteem. And we can esteem the wrong things. Well, here, whenever Jesus put it on this other word, and this other word also is sometimes translated as friend. It's a close relationship. So he is asking Peter, Jesus asking Peter if his relationship is really a close relationship, a commitment to him. And that grieved Peter. And then another thing, another illustration I think that is important about the tenses of the Greek. There's where Peter made the confession of Jesus when the great confession, and then Jesus said, I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom of God. And whatever you bound will have been bound in heaven. And whatever you loose shall have been loosed in heaven. Well, now, sometime in the old versions, or several of them, it says, whatever you bind will be bound. But now, that is used there as a perfect tense. And a perfect tense means that it has already happened and that the result is still relevant. So, actually, what he's saying there, that I'm going to give you discernment where you can tell. Now, you know, the first to have power to forgive sins is one thing, and somebody to have discernment to see what sins is forgiven in the others or have the feeling of the Spirit is another thing. And I do not think that the Scriptures anywhere tells us that anyone has the power to forgive sins. But whenever we're closely related to God, well, then we can have some discernment in what's happening.
Now, as you translated from the Greek, were there those authors of different books like Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then, of course, John? We always talk about those four Gospels, and yet they're all a little different, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Especially John is different. Is different really from Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
So it was his purpose. I mean, he just had a different purpose in writing his account.
Well, the other three were written together. They wrote about the same things, or some most of the same things. But John wrote in the latter time, and seemed like that he was more interested in spiritual things. You know, he never said anything about baptism or about the Lord's Supper. The others did. But he did tell us about the foot washing, and the others did not tell us. But John was more interested in spiritual things, and John was a simple fisherman. So his words are simpler, and there's more words on each word, each page, than the others. but he was profound also.
Why do you think there are so many churches today because of the different translations where it seems like we all should be one body of Christ?
Well, that would certainly be the ideal, but I guess it never has been. Even in that first 12, if one of them had turned out bad.
That's for sure, yes.
And so I don't guess it. I don't know if any church is perfect.
Now, there are a lot of books that give different translations. A lot of those are translated, like, from the King James to make it easier to understand in today's language. Are they kind of watering down the real meaning?
Well, I think that really if you're going to have a good, accurate translation, you've got to go back to the Greek and the Hebrew. Because when it gets passed into other languages, it loses some of the vitality of it.
Now, you translated one of the books from the Hebrew to English.
As the Book of Ruth.
Why did you choose that one to do from Hebrew?
Well, you know, I don't really know, except I liked Ruth. And I thought that had a wonderful message in it. And, you know, sometimes the Jews had hatred toward the Moabites. And here was a Moabite that was really in the genealogy of Jesus. And it's just such a beautiful book. I fell in love with it. And I just studied each day. And it's been part of my study for some time.
Do you have any favorite authors? Is there one that stands out more to you through this translation from the Greek to the English? Is there anyone who just impressed you more?
Yes, sir. Sure, that's certainly true. And that's Dr. Luke. Dr. Luke was a Gentile, and he was the only Gentile. Well, he was the one that told us about the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. And he was the one who told us about the Good Samaritan. And he was the one that told us about the prodigal son and the rich farmer. I don't know, but Dr. Luke is really my favorite. And he is the only Gentile in the bunch. And he stayed with Paul until the last. And Paul, right before his execution, he said, "Only Luke is with me." You know, Paul was mentioned many times, hundreds of times, but Luke was only mentioned three times. And Luke didn't mention himself at all. It was Paul referring to Luke that his name was mentioned. And we recognize Luke by the we passages in Acts. We see where Luke comes in. Evidently, he was a citizen of Philippi. And whenever Paul had that vision, and when he wanted to go up north, and he had the vision, that in his vision says, a man says, "Come over and help us in Macedonia." Well, and then that is where Luke came in. And I think really that Luke was the man that was in the vision. And whenever they left Troas, then Luke was with them. And he went and stayed at Philippi. Whenever Paul was run out of Philippi, well, Luke stayed there. And then 4 years later, when he was going to Jerusalem, he came back by Philippi and picked up Luke. And then Luke went to Jerusalem. And whenever Paul got in trouble and was sent up to Caesarea, well, we don't see Luke anymore. And I guess that's the time that Luke had days to look on the history of Jesus. And then whenever Paul was sent to Rome for a trial and went through Jerusalem and went on back to Rome, was Dr. Luke with him. And so Dr. Luke was really my favorite.
We've been listening to Pastor Wilton, Clyde C. Wilton. He is the author of his book, The Wilton Translation of the New Testament. Pastor Wilton, tell us how we can get your book.
Well, it's on the internet.
Yeah, they can Google. They can
always be found on the internet.
Right.
Just, I think you could Google it by putting my name in there.
Clyde C. Wilton is the name of the author. Well, Pastor, we appreciate you being with us so much, and keep up your great work.
Thank you very much. It is my privilege.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Living with an Imposter, A Confluence of Art, Depression, and Dementia. And the author is Lawrence W. Lee, and Lawrence joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Trafford Publishing. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, Steve. It's a pleasure to speak with you this morning.
Well, it's great to have you with us, and this is going to be very, very sobering to all of us who are more of a spectator, obviously, in these kinds of things of depression and dementia and Alzheimer's and all the very, very tremendous impact that has on all parties involved, the person who has it and the caregiver. So this one is very convoluted, and everyone will understand as we discuss this, quite a challenge. This is what you write. This book is about a creative, intelligent man who battles clinical depression for most of his life, holds it in stalemate through drugs and determination, and then is shattered again when his wife is diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It's also about how unexpected events can crush a lifetime of hard work and careful planning, and the idea that people most often don't take the time to ask the hard questions that need to be asked before it is too late. Well, that in itself is very sobering and obviously very dramatic, And we reach out to you, Lawrence, and beyond words of what to say at this moment, as we will learn the kind of what's happened to your wife and what you've been through. But first of all, Lawrence, let's just kind of go back, way back, back when life was fulfilling and married the girl of your dreams and everything was working, wasn't it?
It was. For years, people had described us as soulmates, and I had no idea what that really meant. And it took a number of years before I figured it out. And actually, we were soulmates. We worked, we were both professional artists. We were painters, and worked in the same studio toe-to-toe for nearly 30 years. And so we became, we spent more time together than most married couples do in only a couple of years of living.
So it was your clinical depression that started first?
Yes, I have to say that looking back on it, as I am wont to do, I think now that I have pretty well identified the real probability that I was clinically depressed as early as 9 years old, but I was not clinically given a diagnosis of clinical depression until I was in high school. And after that, it was a kind of thing that stayed with me, although it was manageable usually at that point, not through drugs, but through being active, very active in other endeavors. So when I was in college, I was so busy that I didn't have time to be depressed. And when I met Mary, she was the best antidepressant in the world. So I went for a good 5 or 10 years without any depression, and then it began to sneak up on me again.
And you've gone through all kinds of different kinds of therapy, all the different kinds of treatment.
I have indeed. I have been through talk therapy, various and sundry drugs that have either worked or not worked, or worked for a short period of time and then quit working altogether. I have had electroshock therapy, which was effective in my case, but very expensive. And I have most recently had transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is the kind of new cousin on the block. And it was also effective, but is apparently at this point beginning to wear off.
So while you're going through all this with the support of Mary, your wife, and as you pointed out, the best thing probably to help you through this, in 2001, what happened? What did you see in 2001?
In 2001, Mary and I were having dinner with some friends in Arizona. And the friend was a doctor, and he took me aside after our meal and said that I should take Mary to see a neurologist because she was word searching, which is one of the early signs for dementia. And so we arranged for her to see not one but three neurologists over a period of several months. And at the end of that, the sad story was that the neurologist said she either has Alzheimer's or something so close to it, it doesn't make any difference. And I knew at that point that my world had changed forever.
In fact, you write, our dream was ripped to shreds. Was it kind of something that just kind of kept building and building within you? You could just feel that?
Well, we had a very good life. We had worked very hard. We had saved very hard. At that time, we had a lovely home in the Caribbean. I was teaching myself to sail. We could work if we wanted to. If we didn't, we didn't have to. We were also maintaining a ranch in southern Arizona, and things were just idyllic. I thought I had planned well for the future and was finally beginning to receive some of the benefit of the American dream. And then when this happened, discovered that that was not going to be the case after all. And I, of course, hindsight is always pretty clear. And looking back on it now, I can see that there had been some indications early on, as many as 10 years prior, that Mary was going to have some problems with dementia. But it was something I chose to ignore. And in fact, very early on in our conversation, Steve, you mentioned one of the most important parts of the book, and that is the idea that these changes can happen to people's lives when they least expect it. And no matter how well prepared they are, the changes can be devastating. And if there is a message in the book, it is that people should take the time to discuss with their significant other those difficult questions that none of us want to ask. The questions about, what would you want me to do if, God forbid, there came a time in which I had Alzheimer's or some other kind of dementia, or if I was struck down by a stroke or a heart attack, just so that it's clear and you can make plans accordingly. Mary and I were young. Mary was only 60 years old when she first was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and we had not had that conversation.
And so the title of the book, Living with an Imposter, because that's what it feels like now. Where did Mary go, or who is this woman, right?
That's right. I wanted to take her by the shoulders and shake her and say, where is my wife? What have you done with her? You look like her, you sound like her, but you don't act like her. And there were lots of circumstances, some of which were almost funny, in which the woman I would be standing next to would be very comfortable to me because I had been with her for so long, but she would act out of character in such a way that I knew that the woman that I had married was no longer there.
Well, you hear this A word a lot more these days. This is really, is it an epidemic?
I don't know that it's an epidemic. Certainly, there you see a lot of changes in reporting. The incidence of Alzheimer's and other dementias, but certainly it's something that we're more aware of, and it is becoming something that is entirely, that is heading toward being too difficult for us to deal with. There are so many people that have already been diagnosed in the United States. Today, over 5.4 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease. And we're just into the 21st century, and you can imagine at the rate we're going how what a terrible figure that's going to be in just another decade. One of the direct offshoots of that has to do with how much it is going to cost not only our country and the world, but how much it costs individuals to deal with the ramifications of Alzheimer's. And when I began to study the consequences that led me eventually down the path I ended up going down, I was stunned to discover that it costs, depending upon the severity of the disease at the particular time, it costs $20,000 to $40,000 a year to deal with someone who has Alzheimer's, and that care in a nursing home can cost between $40,000 and $70,000 a year. And those figures are just were compiled sometime within the past 5 years. So I can imagine that they're much higher now, and I do know that some couples have decided to leave the United States and go to other countries where they can more easily deal with these kinds of horrible financial consequences. I thought that in all of my financial planning, I had provided for our retirement and was very secure in that knowledge, until I was informed of the fact that in Arizona, as is the case in many other states, in order for someone to qualify for Medicaid once they have been struck down by something like Alzheimer's, you essentially have to impoverish yourself. And in Arizona, this meant that Mary could own a car, whether she drives or not. She could own a home worth up to $500,000. But she could never have more than about $1,200 in the bank. And if we stayed married, that meant that I would have to be in the same situation. It also meant that we couldn't give away our life savings. We couldn't give it to our grandchildren. we had to spend it and impoverish ourselves in the process. So the choice I was given by the elder law attorneys, they said very clearly, if you were poor, no problem. If you were rich, no problem. But since you're just an average American, you've got a big problem. The only way for you to save this 30 years of savings and be able to do what you want with it is for you to get a divorce. So that's what I did. I bought Mary a house worth almost $500,000 and gave her most of the monies that she could have, and arranged for other monies to be made available for her care as it was needed, so that she would get the best care she could get for as long as she could get it and stay out of any kind of clinical environment. And I got what was left, and that was just enough to make me an impoverished old man.
And how long has it been since you've seen Mary?
It's been 5 years since I've seen her. Since Mary was 9 years my senior, it was... And it was 10 years ago that she was diagnosed, about 10 years, 10 now, now maybe it's 12 or 13 years since she was first diagnosed with Alzheimer's. It's been a long, long time, but even though I stayed with her and did my best to care for her, it became obvious at one point or another that I was going to be unable to care for her in the way she needed it, especially with the depression that was that had come along with it. This is typically called a reactive depression, which is a depression that leads from some specific occurrence in your life. And a reactive depression you can usually either overcome through medication or talk therapy in a fairly short period of time. But since I was prone to depression to begin with, after the reactive depression had been dealt with, I was still in the throes of major depression, and that's what I'm still currently dealing with. And, of course, having a person suffering major depression trying to be the caregiver for someone in late-stage Alzheimer's is just a non-starter.
Well, Lawrence, again, your whole purpose of your book, we just have about a minute here. Again, tell us what you're trying to accomplish for helping others.
Well, I wanted to give people a really gutsy look at the reality of depression and Alzheimer's. Depression in the fact that it is a disease just like any other. It's just like pancreatic cancer, or like diabetes, and a walk around the park or stopping to smell the roses does not help. And Alzheimer's is a debilitating disease that can affect not only your life view, but can ruin you financially. And my big point is that people need to take the time while they still have the opportunity to ask their partners what they want them to do. Mary asked me to kill her 3 times during this process, and I had decided that if she had asked me once more, I would do it regardless of the consequences, because she was a very intelligent person and knew what was happening to her, and I just couldn't bear to see her suffering like that. And that's one of the other reasons that I ended up having to leave. So the whole intent of the book is to get people to take another look at their lives and see if they have made adequate provision for this kind of catastrophe.
We've been listening to Lawrence W. Lee. He is the author of his book, Living with an Imposter, A Confluence of Art, Depression, and Dementia. Lawrence, tell us how to get your book.
Well, there are actually 2 ways. If you've got a good memory, you can go to livingwithanimpostor.com. That's spelling imposter with an O-R at the end. Or if you don't want to remember that much, you can go to uku.com. That's UKKU.com.
Thank you so much, Lawrence, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
It was my pleasure.
And best to you, and certainly best for Mary. And this interview,
thank you very much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Trafford Publishing.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.